Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, October the 21st. And our top story today is about a Dover landlady who attacked a customer she found sleeping behind the bar. Well, Lucy joins me now with more on this court case. Lucy, what's the background to this?
Well, Maidstone Crown Court was told how a row had broken out at the Staggered Inn micro pub in the High Street in December last year. Serena Scoble had accused her husband and the victim of winking at each other. She was said to have continued shouting at the woman before leaving the venue.
But it then became more violent.
Yes, the court was also told how Mr. Scoble had given the victim a blanket and pillow to sleep behind the bar after she'd become intoxicated. She was then woken at about 11 p.m. by 47-year-old Mrs. Scoble, who kicked her in the back and then threw two glasses at her. The glass caused a deep wound in the victim's knee. She had to be taken to hospital for treatment.
And what did the victim say about the impact it's had on her?
Well, she described how it seriously impacted her mental health, increasing anxiety and leaving her struggling to sleep. She went on to say she can't go out with friends or family because she's afraid of something happening again. She also has trouble walking due to her injury.
Finally, Lucy, what sentence was handed down?
Well, she was given a 9-month sentence that was suspended for 18 months. She's also been told to do 100 hours of unpaid work.
Lucy, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and it's been an absolute nightmare on the M25 in Kent after a huge lorry fire overnight. The vehicle caught alight on the clockwise carriageway between Sevenoaks and Godston. At the height of the blaze, 5 fire engines and 2 water carriers were at the scene. While recovery and repairs were expected to take several hours, you can in fact see pictures at Kent Online today. The closure also led to the M26 being shut London bound. Alternative routes, including the A21, A25 and A22, were also very busy. Don't forget, you can follow our travel blog on Kent Online for the very latest travel news. You can also listen to our sister radio station, KMFM. A Chatham dad was caught on a doorbell camera kicking in the front door of his former partner's home. Kieran Healy caused more than £1,000 worth of damage to the lock and frame when it happened in June. The 39-year-old from Castle Road has been ordered to pay compensation and put on a conditional discharge. A dad from Deal who was caught with a knife after being pulled over for drink and drug driving has avoided prison. Charlie Atkin was stopped by police in the Strand after he was spotted on CCTV taking cocaine. The 35-year-old from Mill Hill was over the legal limit for drugs and alcohol. He's been ordered to attend rehab sessions and given a 32-month driving ban. The family of a man who's gone missing from Medway say his disappearance is out of character. Regan Phillips was last seen on Commercial Road in Stroud after a night out with friends on Friday. Teams have been searching for the 25-year-old who's thought to have tried to walk back to his home in Hoo. We're being asked what we think about planned changes to firefighter response time targets in Kent. At the moment, crews aim to get to an emergency within 10 minutes, no matter where it is. Well, bosses now want to make it 15 minutes for rural areas and 9 minutes for urban ones because of the different risks. Kate's been chatting to Anne Millington, who's the Chief Exec of Kent Fire and Rescue Service.
I think it's really important to say from the outset, we're actually not changing any aspect of the service we deliver. We were still trying to get to everybody as quickly as we possibly can. What this recognises, it is a real desire to make sure that we're as transparent as we possibly can be. And we've always tried to do that. But we suspect that how we measure the times between getting to urban areas where we've got higher risk and, say, a small isolated rural village, we just need to be clear in how we're measuring that. So this doesn't change any aspect of what we're doing now. We will always try and get there quickly. But we do need to have much more assessment of that. And that's partly because we also need to design all our other services, all our prevention services, to make sure that we can get to, you know, whatever village it may well be, and say, can we do more prevention work in this area? Because the likelihood is, when we've measured this over time, it's still going to be a bit longer than it would be if somebody was living in a very urban area. So it's all about transparency and better measurement. And then that helps us design services, as opposed to anything actually changing in what we currently do.
Does it also serve to manage expectations as well? So when somebody rings for the service, you're able to give them a much more accurate idea of when you'll be there to give help?
I think it's exactly that. And to be fair, obviously, when somebody's having a fire or they're involved in some awful incident, we know that all of these minutes count. It's going to feel even longer, of course, by the time we get there. But realistically, having that message, and I think one of the important messages to make at this point is that what we don't want is people to tackle the fire because they perceive it might be that we're going to be a couple of minutes more. Because obviously we do see injuries when that happens. So it's really important that one of the central messages here is please, please call us. We will be on our way as quickly as possible. Sometimes it might be quicker than we're suggesting, but we want to be very honest so we do manage expectation. And I think, to be fair, just the kind of honesty of that relationship with the people that we serve about saying, if you live in a particular area, it's just longer for us to get there, the road networks and traffic and so on and so on.
I believe as part of the consultation, another question will be how much would people be prepared to pay in their council tax? Can you tell me a little bit about that aspect?
Yes, for sure. I mean, obviously, we are massively and acutely aware that there are a lot of financial pressures on householders at the moment and indeed other people who even work in Kent. So we're acutely aware of that. Of course, the reality is, as the world changes and some of the instances we're going to are more complex, we're seeing things like lithium batteries and e-bikes, and there are different risks that are emerging in the county. We've done a lot of work on these risks for the last few years now. We need new equipment, we need different equipment, we need highly skilled firefighters. All of that takes money to train them. So what we've offered is a kind of series of options that people can tick, and it's really important for us to know how they feel about their fire and rescue service and what they would be willing to pay. At the same time as our recognising that we're not trying to ask for too much, because we do a lot to balance our books, we do a lot of efficiency work. We're always looking to make things as efficient as we possibly can. And that means that when people are paying their money, we're not wasting it. But of course, the nature of costs in their household and indeed for us as an organisation are steadily increasing. And as much as possible, obviously, we want people to carry on supporting us as brilliantly as they do.
Now, the consultation is open until January the 18th, and you can find it on the Kent Fire and Rescue Service website.
Kent Online reports.
Bosses in Sevenoaks have objected to plans for more than 130 new homes over fears the town's water supplies could be contaminated. Gas company SGN applied to redevelop the site of two former gas holders in Cramptons Road. The council are concerned the digging would affect the nearby water treatment works. South East Water have also objected to the scheme. Meantime, bosses in Folkestone have approved plans for 160 new properties. One estate in Sellinch will include 105, while the other development will make up the rest. They'll go up on land near Possum Farm and south of Ashford Road. And a decision on whether to build new homes between Canterbury and Sandwich has been delayed over safety fears. There are plans for 17 houses in Wingham, but there are concerns over the junction of Gobry Hill and Preston Hill. Developers say they've addressed the problems in their latest application. Now, it's feared plans for more beach huts on part of the Kent coast will cause traffic problems in a nearby village. Bosses in Dover want to add 33 buildings to the 23 already at Kingsdown near Deal at a cost of £130,000. But residents think it'll make parking even more difficult, particularly in the popular summer months. Elizabeth Monk has been speaking to reporter Sam Lennon.
My concern is that this is a very iconic view and a very special village that has been like this since Victorian days, and that there is not room for the traffic or all the things that will go with it if they put in so many extra huts.
And it is, you understand, it's 33 huts that are coming on top of 23.
The message from the council is that they want to have 33 extra huts.
Are you worried that in particular there's no room for extra people coming here, that it's too difficult for parking and people as it is?
Yes. On an August weekend, it's almost impossible to park down there, and they park all over the village, and I think become a danger to other people who are walking and possibly emergency services. They are private roads that lead to the beach. and they're just not fit for extra traffic.
Now, the council say that under their plans, they will own and maintain the huts and will lease them to people currently on a waiting list. They say no decisions have been made on new huts just yet, and it would be subject to planning permission.
Kent Online reports.
A man's been sentenced for attacking a police officer while being arrested at his home in Dover. William Mahu bent the officer's fingers back and tried to headbutt him before running away with handcuffs attached to one of his hands. The 27-year-old from Selkirk Road was stopped by an officer using Parva spray. He's been ordered to do 120 hours of unpaid work and pay £250 in compensation. It's been revealed an NHS trust in Kent is set to spend £250,000 on changing its name, despite struggling to reduce waiting lists. Kent and Medway NHS and Social Care Partnership Trust, or KMPT as it's known, will be known as Kent and Medway Mental Health NHS Trust in future. Bosses insist it'll make it clearer what services they provide, but councillors have criticised the trust's performance. Now, figures seen by the Kent Online podcast show £11 million in fines is owed by drivers in Kent who've not paid the ULEZ charge. Transport for London says it's now bringing in more enforcement to get the cash. Well, the charge is for the most polluting vehicles heading from the county into the capital. Nearly 125,000 fines have been issued since August last year. Next today, and a former MEP from Kent says he hopes one day there'll be another Brexit vote for the next generation. Anthony Hook is now leader of the Lib Dems at the County Council and has been speaking on the Kent Politics podcast. He campaigned to stop the UK leaving the EU in 2019.
It was an intense period. Now, what I was hoping to do by doing all that work was to that would help provide evidence for people back home that, look, Europe is really important and it's really important that we're there. And I think we came agonizingly close to stopping Brexit, but just not quite close enough. I mean, the 2019.
Anthony, do you still think we should rejoin the EU?
Yes, definitely. Absolutely. It will be a long process. Yeah, sorry.
Do you not think that would, is the arguably the most important vote in British history, definitely the most important referendum in British history, because we haven't had many. Do you not think that would bear the risk of basically poisoning the world with British democracy for a generation, overturning such a major vote which we've only just gotten past? And you say you try to sort of, you think that the case needs to be made in Britain for the EU, but do you not think, the state of, the state of human rights in Belarus is not why people voted for or against Brexit? They voted because of, many, many other problems, not least for immigration.
I think democracy is not an event, it's a process. And I think that's why I thought in 2019 it would be very sensible to put the question back to the public to say, do we want this or not? Because certainly by 2019, more people had an idea of what the reality of Brexit was going to be than had in 2016. And all of the polls were indicating the public would have said, no, stop this nonsense now. And I also think at some point in the future, I mean, don't get me wrong, Dan, we will not rejoin this year, next year, anytime soon. It will be at least another 10 years from now, I think. And we would have to persuade the 27 that it's in their interest to have Britain back in, which would be a big challenge. So I think it will be at least another 10 years from now by the time we do rejoin, but we've got to start having the conversation. And I think by the time we get to, say, the mid-2030s, the British public that exists today should be entitled to make a choice. And it would ring pretty hollow to say to 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds in 2030, you can't have a decision on this because your parents' generation in 2016 made a decision by very narrow margin. And you're absolutely right. I mean, no one down the dark and darkest about human rights in Belarus, but that is just one small example of the importance of Europe working together. Ukraine is a much bigger and more obvious example.
And you can hear that very latest episode of the Kent Politics podcast in full by just searching for that Kent Politics podcast wherever you listen to your pods.
Kent Online News.
There are plans to set up permanent pitches in Ashford Town Centre to give the market there a bit of a boost. The existing one on the Lower High Street only attracts a few traders, so the authority is considering letting stallholders back into busier parts of the town. It's more than 15 years since it moved. Work has started on the new multi-million pound home for Sittingbourne Rugby Club. The £2.5 million project off Wises Lane in Borden will include state-of-the-art facilities, physiotherapy rooms and a kitchen and bar. The club turns 50 in 2026 and will be able to move in next year. Kent's JB Gill has survived his first dance-off on Strictly. The JLS star, who has a farm in the county, was in the bottom two after his jive at the weekend. He beat former footballer Paul Merson, who became the latest celeb to be eliminated. And finally, a former Rochester pupil has returned to the school he went to as a teacher. Rayo Mardell went to St Peter's Infants for 3 years from 2006 and started working there in September after graduating. The 22-year-old says when the job came up, it felt like a sign.
When I was a kid, I know it sounds silly, but I always wanted to be a teacher. And at parents' evenings, I'd tell my teachers I'd want to be them one day. And then I was sort of into drama, and then I thought maybe not for me. I mean, it sort of links to teaching and drama, it sort of links, because you're very out there, very creative, very enthusiastic. So I thought, oh, maybe going down the teaching route, I can bring my drama skills to children and show them it's okay to be yourself and to be out there. It was just, it felt like home, to be honest. My mum worked here as well when I was here, and it's just really nice just to come back to my roots and to see the staff that were still working here when I visited, and I saw them, I felt like I'm returning back to like a family. So it'd be really nice just to come back home. The layout of the school is just exactly the same. The playground was just, it brought back so many memories. Just the classrooms as well, just seeing how they've not changed at all. It's just been amazing just to walk back into here and just see everything still the same. And even just seeing the teachers as well that are still here, I just couldn't believe it.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first up, and the Gillingham manager says he's confident they can turn things around after four defeats in a row. They lost 2-1 to Bradford City in League Two away from home at the weekend, and Mark Bonner spoke to us after the final whistle.
I thought we warranted something from the game, really. I thought it was a fairly balanced and even game. I thought we were excellent in the first 25-30 minutes, first half of the first half, really. I thought it was really good, started well. Score a great goal, and actually had one or two moments very similar to that. I mean, one's P-rolled and hit the post, and the defenders cleared it, just stopping Hawks from tapping in. So we were really pleased with the intent in that game. In the early part of the game, obviously we picked a team that was a big team and a physical team to try and make ourselves as robust as possible against a really physical team. So for a game that was like a lot of big aggressive players and a good football match, really, a good aggressive English football match. There weren't many bad tackles, but there seemed to be shed loads of yellow cards, which was a bit crazy. And I felt like that just lost the rhythm of the game, and the game became more emotional in the first half than it needed to be, just from some erratic decisions, really. And then that said, despite the team that we've picked, like, we're absolutely fuming with ourselves because of the two goals we conceded. Because when we're set up like we are, we're as big as we are, we certainly shouldn't fall behind to goals like that, albeit that's the strength of theirs, but it's a strength of ours usually as well. So we're really frustrated that we haven't been able to see those moments out. One right before half-time, we should defend them both. I think the free kick is like ridiculously soft in the far corner against Jaden, and you look at some of the treatment Hawks gets, and he gets dragged to the ground and doesn't get free kicks, and then things like that get given. That's just where it does your head in, because yes, we should do better, of course we should, but like things like that just don't help you in a game, and that level, that consistent bit in the game just frustrates the life out of you. And then players get really frustrated and get like silly bookings, and it looks like the game's lost control a little bit in that last 15 minutes of the second half, and it wasn't that game really. So I don't know how we made it turn it into that, really, but there you go. We lost the game because we didn't defend our box properly, or we came searching a couple of times. Jake, we asked him to do that, but maybe we got caught a little bit there. And then we're in at half time frustrated, but I tried to make the lads realise ill discipline will lose us the game. 10 players on the pitch doesn't help us. And then second thing was the end of the first half can make it feel like the first half was horrible, when actually it wasn't. It was just like those moments where, and we end up in a bad position. And then second half is a different kind of game. What we knew today was when we started the team we did, our chase team, because of what probably players could do physically, we were going to get smaller. It was going to become a bit more of a technical game. We had lots of the ball second half, but didn't create enough quality moments or test the goalkeeper enough against that low block when we needed to face forward, play forward. We lost some moments to do that. But I really like the committed nature of the team. 400 fans support us all day and clap us off the pitch because they've seen a team that's had a right go in the game. And the frustration today is that we've probably lost a game that we feel like we should have taken something else.
Well, the Jewels will be back in action on Tuesday night. They welcome Newport County to Priestfield. And in ice hockey, Kent's Invicta Dynamos have recorded a huge win in the South Division 1. They beat Milton Keynes Thunder 15-1 away from home yesterday. The Mows are currently fifth in the table with 6 wins and 4 losses so far this season. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.